Welcome back to the Reverse Autoimmune Disease Summit Series, everybody. Of course, you're joining us for the Autoimmune Detox, which is the fourth iteration of the Reverse Autoimmune Disease Summit. And I'm talking about all different kinds of detoxification when I'm talking about the autoimmune detox, things that are toxins in our lives that we may not even be aware of and may be getting in the way of happiness and abundance as well as health. So my guest today is going to be talking to that. We're going to be talking about detoxing your money story, how to create abundance within and without. Katana Abbott, really sweet friend of mine, is a retirement reinvention coach, certified financial planner, host of Smart Women Talk Radio, and the founder of Smart Women's Empowerment. For 30 years, Katana has inspired women 50 and over to thrive by finding their purpose, creating lifetime income, launching encore careers, and preparing for the unexpected. She loves helping women create the third act of their dreams and believes a smart woman doesn't retire. She simply reinvents. Welcome to the series, Katana.
Oh, I'm really excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
So you have a very compelling life story. We've talked about it before. And, you know, trauma is one of the things I talk a lot about and how it impacts our health. And we have health that is in these arenas of financial health, physical health, relationship health, right? And we're going to be talking a little bit about that financial health, but there's a saying that says how you do one thing is how you do everything, right? And so I know this might be sort of like a, why is she talking about in an autoimmune summit, you know, finances? And I'm just trying to bring this to people that toxicity comes in so many different ways and shapes and forms and places where you might be struggling with your health. Actually, you might be struggling in other areas for the same exact mental blocks, right? So let's talk about a little bit about your story, where you came from that has you doing what you do today.
Absolutely, thank you. Oh, so what you just said about how money affects our health, everyone knows this, right? And everyone knows that money affects our health, but I really believe it's our experiences that really affect our health. And Anne Bancroft has a quote that I just love. And she says, the things we overcome in life really become our strengths. Mm. And I believe this, and I don't think this is some kind of random thing, you know, all these things that happen to us. You know, I really believe that, you know, even when I look back at my life, and I'll share just a little bit about it. But when I look back at it, you know, the good and the bad, you know, I really see that it was all perfect, the good and the bad. And it was part of this journey that I'm supposed to be on, you know, and it's the journey I'm supposed to be on to do what I do today. And you know, I'm getting goosebumps when I talk about it. I actually get kind of excited, even though the story is horrible. And I hope that those are listening or watching, you know, when I'm talking today, keep thinking about yourself and think about your own story. So by the time I was 20 years old, I had already experienced, you know, death and divorce and abuse, financial abuse. And, you know, and that's why I've come into this work. My father died when I was six. My mom had no idea what to do. She was left with three kids under 6 years old. He had drowned. It was during the Vietnam War. So she took that money and she bought a house, paid cash for it, but she wanted someone to take care of her. She wanted her Prince Charming, right? And she ended up with a monster. And so there were 10 years of abuse, financial abuse, and a lot of other stuff bad, you know? And at the end of that 10-year period though, she had lost the house and he had sold it and taken the money. And then she had breast cancer. And right at that time, I was going through my own nightmare. And what I want to point out here is, again, these experiences, we start thinking that they're true, even though they're not. And so, you know, quite often we go back to the familiar. So I went back to what I knew and I married my own monster. And the thing is that all of us have these feelings of intuition, which is our soul, and then fear. And so in my case, I knew in my heart that he was bad just by things he was doing, but I thought I could change him. So I married him anyway. So, you know, within that first year, it was, again, total nightmare. He ended up, he just wanted his green card. And I ended up, he ended up putting me in the hospital. And here's the thing, he came to the courthouse where I had criminal charges against him, and immigration was there, and he jumped in the car and he threatened to track me down and kill me. And so I didn't even go to court about this. That's how scared I was. And so where in your life are you hiding? What could have, how could my life have been different had I somehow, you know, and I try to play it in my mind, walk up those steps and show up in that courthouse and confront him, you know? So at that point I didn't, but I will share that again, this idea of being on this journey and having guardian angels and being on a path where you're go where all of this is for you. I read Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. I don't even know where it came from. And a light bulb went off. And I said, he talked about burning desire, and mine was, I'll never be a victim again. And so I started on a path of personal development from then on. And it hasn't stopped. You know, I've spent, I don't even want to say how much, you know, like a master's degree at a really expensive university. And I know so many here, you know, are doing the same thing. But it changed everything and it gave me tools. So I, you know, I could move forward. But so now I just want to share, my mom ended up with a wonderful husband and a great life. I want to share that, you know, she got remarried and it was a love story. It was great. And then I met my Prince Charming, and he really was, he came in and bought a car for me, and we've been married 35 years. We live in a lake and, you know, we have a great life. But for my career, I have been focused on educate. He goes, can't you stop teaching? Can't you stop? I said, no, it's just, I can't help it. So I'm a teacher and I want to help women stand in their power with money. I mean, that is just like, I guess, my purpose in life. And so all of us, we have this purpose and we may not know it. And I'm going to give you a tip you can do. It's very easy. Sit down with a piece of paper and just go back to your beginning of your life and break it up into decades and do age 0 to 10, 10 to 20, 20 to 30. And write it like, a, you know, like write down who were the characters, what was the experience, what happened, what was the, you know, the theme, and then go to the next one. And then, you know, go to the next one and then go back and say, what were the lessons for each time? So that's the key. When something happens, good or bad, find out what the lesson was. What did you learn from it? And do it for all of that. And I promise you, you're going to find the gift, or the very first thing I said, because you're going to go, oh my goodness, if that didn't happen, this wouldn't have happened. And that person, even though all these bad things happened, you're going to, I promise you, you're going to be able to heal through that. So it's a great exercise. I just call it a decades exercise, but it is really great for healing.
That's beautiful. I know you did a survey of women and you asked, what's your single biggest financial challenge? I'd love to hear what the results were.
Okay, so you let me know what you think, if this is what you would have guessed. But we've had 229 women that have taken the survey, which is, you know, a nice number. And interesting, 68% are over 50. So, you know, there's this demographic that we're reaching, and you know, I didn't know we were going to reach that demographic, but that's who we're attracting. So the number one financial challenge, and I had listed in the survey maybe six different things, and they could pick any that they want or as many.
What are the six?
I don't have them all in front of me, and I think I closed the window. But the number one was, they said this, eliminating self-limiting beliefs, false beliefs, self-doubt. They knew it. Mm-hmm. Number two was earning enough. Now, how related are these, right?
Yep.
If you have these beliefs like I'm not good enough, you're going to undercharge, you might be afraid to launch something or to accept a speaking engagement if you don't, you know, that's the huge one. And so I think they really nailed it. The second thing we said then, what were your goals? And the number one, ease and joy, creating more ease and joy in my life. So it wasn't to make money. And I'll bet you with men, it's going to be make more money, right? But with women, the second one was to retire with enough money. because we all know at some point we need to replace the income that we're earning. Now, more women are working later, way later, but creating more ease and joy. And so we're going to talk about that today because there's another study by Fidelity. It's called the FIT study. And they said that half the women that have a money manager, so these are women that have money, maybe in a 401k or an IRA or brokerage account, or they inherited something, they 50% have not even talked to the advisor. And when asked why, they're uncomfortable about talking about money. And the second thing, they asked about the biggest roadblock, and they said that they found that there was a lack of confidence and it's too personal. And so I realize when I do a money course, like I have a course, Money Drama Breakthrough, that I did years ago. And with that course, we do not start out with budgets, you know, or debt or any. We start out with your money story and finding out what I just did with the decades to find out, you know, your belief system. And that's really where we need to start, because the key to all of this, as you'll find, is going to be our beliefs and our money beliefs and just our beliefs about ourselves. So,
well, along with that money story, you talk about 5 money personalities and I would love to hear more about that, because this is, I guess, those beliefs are going to inform your personality. I have the HURT model, the healing and resolved trauma model that, you know, came from my study when I was in my PhD program in 2013. And, you know, one of the things that I talk about is that old trauma, it's not about the trauma. It's about the meaning and the belief that you have as a result of it, that you made up with your brain that's not fully developed yet in childhood, right? And then at the age of 26, you finally have a fully developed brain, but you also have this belief system already in place. And unless you really intentionally go back and start taking a look at it, it'll just stay there and inform you for the rest of your life. So like an upset 6-year-old can be driving your car, right? So it's an important piece, I think, around money too. And I would love to hear about these 5 money personalities.
Well, I'll hit all of them and maybe just give an example, you know, a real quick example of each one and how I've seen them play out. And I want you to know, when I say these things, and if you recognize yourself, it doesn't mean that these are negative. These are things that happened because of things you heard or saw or witnessed. And all of us can take this and turn it around and stand in our power with these. But this is the best thing, is look at the symptoms, right?
Right.
What are you seeing? So, there's 5. And when I say them, see if any of, like, just the words, when I say them, if any of them, you know, trigger you. And as we're going through this, maybe write a little note. And I will say, I'm giving everyone my book, The 5 Biggest Money Mistakes Women Make and How to Fix Them. And there's a chapter. And the chapter is called, Why Would You Let a 6-Year-Old Run Your Life, or something like that. And that's what's happening, is our little girl is running it. So love, security, value, status, recognition. Any of those seem like jump out at you?
Yeah. So love is, I think you and I have done this before, because I've been on some of your programs before, and we can have a combination of 2 also, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe one that's primary.
Love is my prime one.
Okay. So, yeah. So let's see. So the desire with love is belonging. And the challenge is self-acceptance. So how this shows up is there's a belief, and, you know, could happen anyway, but I need to do whatever it takes to get love. And so the way this shows up, so again, these are the symptoms, would be over spending. And usually it's to fill a hole in the heart. You know, they're feeling like there's something missing. So they're filling this hole in their heart.
It's a perceived hole, everybody. It's not really a hole.
And I just talked to someone yesterday who has a real hole in her heart too.
But I mean, what that money you think it's going to fill. It's a perceived hole. Yeah.
Right, right. And they can even, and one of my clients actually called it monopoly money, because they feel like there's always more where that came from. And like, if there's debt, it's just going to work its way out some way. Well, because of this belief, these people, these women who I've worked with have often build up debt and even file bankruptcy. So I was working with one woman and a group of young people, and she was a love personality because I did the session for her. And she had all this makeup and all this jewelry and all these clothes, you know, just like real extravagant. And she told me, you know, she we figured out she was a love personality and she was about to go bankrupt. And so I always have someone, that person will I'll have them state what that belief is and then go to where it is in their body, and then we'll close our eyes and they will go right to that experience. And the first time you go through this, it's really good to do that. And so hers was when she was little and wanting something like McDonald's from her mom, and her mother, her aunt said, no, you don't need that. Your mom can't afford it. And her mother said, of course I can afford it. And she got it for her. And when she realized that, she goes, oh my gosh, I'm doing that to my son. See how that happens?
Yeah. And
so she so then when I talked to her the next time after we did this, she was really working on changing the whole thing. Mm-hmm. It was really great. I was excited for her.
And I've worked on it over the last 20 years and it's no longer a problem, but I definitely used to run. I don't anymore. I don't have any debt, but I used to run high credit card debt when I was in my 20s. I was definitely, you know, in that space. And I had to really evaluate it and take a look at it and realize it's a pattern I was running. It wasn't who I was.
Find healthy ways, right?
Yeah.
Healthy ways to feed your soul that way.
Right. Yeah. It's the same with when somebody chooses food to fill that space, or, you know, it's like shopping, food, porn, gambling, sex, drugs, alcohol. It's the same thing, right?
They're all addictions.
They're all that seeking.
Yeah.
Because you think there's something that it's going to fill, and it's, you know, not true. So my viewers have seen me flash this picture a lot. You know, I keep this little picture by my computer, right? Yeah. And so it's like, keep that little one next to you. And when she's feeling abandoned or feeling upset or feeling like there's something wrong that something outside is going to fix, you go to her, right? You don't go to Amazon or right. You go to her and pick her up, you know. I have to say, and I told my husband when we got married, I said, the thing I spend my money on these days is books, travel, and education. And I have a very, very wide and diverse library. And so I allow that. Like, I just go, okay, books are what I buy now, you know, and it's not like buying something that's going to put you into bankruptcy. So I choose what I want to,
like self-improvement.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are all kinds, like Tibetan Buddhism and spirituality, you know, just all kinds.
I'm saying you're educating yourself. So it's
exactly. Yeah.
Better than, you know, bottles of wine.
Instead of clothes or, you know, things, jewelry or things like that. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So books are my thing.
Well, the second personality is that I want to cover is security. And so this is not the opposite of love, but it sounds like it might be, because the desire is freedom. And my husband's a security personality. He's always talking about.
So is mine.
He wants to retire. He wants to retire so he can have freedom. But then his challenge is trust. So you want freedom, but then you don't trust anyone. You don't trust anything. And so the belief is, I never know when what I have could be taken from me. It could be love, money, job, or it could even, money, people, your career, that kind of thing. And so how it shows up is hoarding and self-denial and overthinking purchases. So it's the opposite.
Yeah, you're thinking, it's mine. Yeah.
And, you know, this is the other thing I want you to think about. If this is a spouse, then you have to look at, you know, how can you bless each other? And so this security personality, if you're married to one of these other personalities, when you can sit down and share side by side, then I did it with my husband because I'm a recognition. And so I take these pie in the sky ideas and take a lot of risk. And it used to freak him out. Now we'll sit down in advance and talk about it. And before, when I would try to talk about it, he would shut her down, you know? And then I would get mad thinking he doesn't want to even hear my idea. No, because he was scared I would do it. See, does that make sense?
Yep, that's exactly my husband.
So the value personality is the next one. And I have a really good friend that's value. And so I get to see this played out in family members. The desire is significance. And the challenge here is setting boundaries. So if you know someone, they have a really hard time with it. And because they're trying to prove that they're good enough, sometimes even a good person. So of course that's going to be overgiving, being taken advantage of, you know, helping people out, even if you have to borrow it from your credit card, going into debt for others. And, you know, it can, again, be very detrimental because you can end up in a lot of debt and no savings. And then again, that whole self-worth about not good enough, that's, you know, huge, huge. So all of us, or a lot of us as women, we still have a little bit of that value, you know? And so I actually do these sessions with people, and then I have exercises they can do and empowering words, you know, that are good for that person. When you have a status person, they want to be validated, and the challenge is balance. So they're go, 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 go all the time, right? And the belief is that whatever I achieve or whatever I have, it's never enough. And it's almost that gluttony in the Enneagram.
Yeah.
I think it's eight. And so it shows up compulsively spending, picking up the tab even when you can't afford it, but having to have the newest and best thing. And so I know someone who, you know, has a fancy sedan, a big pickup truck, a motorcycle, and a sports car. Mm. So that's an example, you know, and, you know, we can definitely afford it, but I mean, it's just this idea of just not enough, you know, nothing ever satisfies. You see how that could happen?
Yeah.
And it's a lot of time an overpowering parent that, you know, you're trying to live up to, you know, that's when we go into the back. So the last is a lot of entrepreneurs will find themselves as a recognition personality. And so they want respect, but then, you know, what sabotages that is their challenge is realism. So they come up with these, you know, pie in the sky ideas, like a lot of entrepreneurs, like going to the moon, you know, going to Mars, right? And so they feel their belief is I need to prove I'm right or that I can do it. And a lot of times it's doing it on their own because of a belief that they experienced they had where they didn't get supported and something horrible happened when they were a kid. So now they have these ideas of how they can make the world better. They can improve their life. They never give up. Always looking for the big win. So there's a three-step process. When you're looking at these and you know, if it's Enneagram or if it's money personality, you want to identify what that belief is. And boy, when you understand what that is, you want to release it. So I'm just going to tell you what you can do. It'd be great to have someone with you who knows tapping, who knows breath work, who can help you through this. But when you realize what that belief is, you want to say it out loud and close your eyes and see where you feel it in your body. And you're going to see it could be your throat. It could be in your heart. Mine is always down in my stomach. And as soon as you notice that, then what you want to do is close your eyes. And if you can go to where was I when I first felt that feeling in my body, and it will take them to an experience. It's like magic. And when they go there, then they can see what caused it. And the first thing they better do is, well, they'll see themselves as a little girl. I always say, get her out of there, you know, take her to safety. And then do inner child breath work, blow out candles, do something to shift that energy. Let your little girl know she's loved, she's saved. Thank her for what she's gone through and tell her what to look forward to. That's you. You got to calm that little girl down and let her know. And it sounds really crazy, but when you release that, you're going to, especially I do breath work. And if the energy moves up your throat and out of your head, that means you were angry. And if it moves down, 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 it's either going to more than likely be resentment or it might be regret, you know? And so just play with that. And if anyone wants to, I can actually do a session with them and take them through that. And I know you do this kind of work too, which I always felt so close to you because yours was based on sexual repression even, you know, and problems we have in our life that way.
Yeah, so, any trauma, but yeah, a lot of sexual, yeah.
And the last step, I just want to make sure, is create an action plan then. Create new beliefs, get support. And there's so many things you can do, but deal with that stuff first. Then you can start working on the debt or say, I'm not going to shop anymore because you now understand where it's coming from. And it'll be a little bit of work, but there's definitely help out there for everybody that's going through that.
Yeah. This is important. I remember, you know, because my husband is a security type and I'm a love type, which is the security type is often a 5 or a 6 on the Enneagram, and the love type is often a 2 on the Enneagram, and they don't think alike at all. They don't perceive the world. Their worldview is different. Everything is different, not just their spending habits and the way that they are in relationship with money. And I remember him saying, you have a disease and you need to get help, you know? And I just sat him down and I said, honey, this is actually, I warned you when we got married that I buy books and I have a library that I really like, you know? And so this idea that you have, you know, like you need to try and take a look at everything. Like we have plenty of money. We are, you know, kind of the thing you were just saying, there's always plenty of money, but really look at our spreadsheets, really look at what's going on here. Because sometimes the security type can get wound into this like projections of fear, right? Just like the love type can get wound up into not looking at anything and wind up in debt. And so we got on this really amazing in this space where we could talk to each other, you know, and I could say, okay, let's look at the numbers. So I know where we're at. And so, you know, where we're at, and we have these goals that we're meeting and we are meeting them, and we're, you know, so that you can bring your language together, because boy, a security and a love are about as far apart as you can get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why I said, they're not really opposites, but in a way they are.
Yeah.
And the same thing with the security and the recognition, because you got the security person and the risk person here, you know, wants to go try things. So with my husband and me, here's an example, because, you know, then you want to take this now, like you just did, and look at how is it showing up in our life. So my husband wants to retire in 3 years. He'll be 60. I'll be 65. And he won't have Medicare. And, you know, he'll get his pension early, but there's a big gap in income until, you know, all the other things. We got another pension, he'll have to get Social Security, all those things to kick in. And so I'm looking at, how do I make all of this work? And so his big fear was, we had this like $2,700 a month house payment. I'm going, yeah, but we're going to get that thing paid off in 10 years. We refinanced for 15 years. And he just was really uncomfortable with that. Saying, my risk thing, well, we can do it. I'll figure it out, you know? And so instead he refinanced, and we also pulled $30,000 out and did all the things that were driving me crazy in the house. And he did them himself because he's not working with people he hired, you know, he's like helping him. So he felt really good because he was saving money and doing it himself and learning. But the big thing he actually did it. We talked about it. He refinanced. He pulled the cash out, refinanced for 3% like we had before for 30 years. The payment went to $970. Now he's like, we can't live anywhere in the world this cheap. Now I'm so happy, right? Yeah. And so we're still putting this money aside, but now we're giving it to the financial advisor to invest it. And so we'll have that option because he wanted to have the cash and the low payment. So when you can deal with these, what I'm trying to share is then you can sit down and make really smart choices where everyone's happy. And you can sleep at night. And maybe, you know, there's so many people in getting divorced and fighting over money. And really, if they could just learn where this is coming from, a lot of it is just false beliefs or emotions, and that you can't even get to the solutions.
Right. Yeah, it's really good advice. There's a saying that, you know, millionaires behave differently than normal people. Is that true?
It is so true. You won't even believe it. I mean, I have a whole PowerPoint. I should do this PowerPoint for smart women. And there's a person who's in our group, and I don't know if you know him, but just like you have given us your ebook, one of your good book too. He did too. He's given us one of his books called The First Habit. His name is Lewis Schiff, but he's interviewed hundreds and hundreds of billionaires, and he did a book on billionaires as well. Then he also did a study with one of the big brokerage firms, and they interviewed all these middle class, then millionaires, people with a million, and then people with like 5 to 10 million, but then the 40 million plus guys, like Shark Tank, the ultra high net worth. And it was totally opposite. So let me just share this, because he gave us some really great tips. His whole key in the first habit is find out what your brilliance is, find out what you're good at, and do that. Do that, period. And so he created something, LEAP, if people want to write this down. Learn what you do best. Earn money doing that one thing. Find assistance, that's the A, L-E-A-P, with everything else, meaning outsource, delegate, and eliminate. And the P is persistence, so don't give up. You know, get through it. Make it through. So LEAP. So focus on your strengths, period. And I've known this and I've done it. And when you master this, everything else will shift. And you'll employ a bunch of people because you're making more money. And then all the stuff you hate doing or are not good at, you give other people. And then they're working, they're making money, and they're happy because they love doing that work. So this is the study. They said, how many skills do you have was one of the questions. I'm just going to do two of them because there's a whole bunch of them. So brilliant. But how many skills do you have? So do you have a lot of skills?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. So the middle class said on average, they had 6 skills. When they got to the millionaires, there was 2 groups in between. It was like, I think 2 to 4 skills. When they got to the ultra high wealth, it was 2 skills that they had. And I know that I really do have 2 skills and I should focus on them. But of course, sometimes we have to do the stuff that we're not that great at. Mm-hmm. So I always say, split it up like 80-20, 80% of your time on the things you're great at that you love that make you money. And then 20% will be doing that other stuff that you're not that great at. The second question, okay, should you work at getting better at things you're not good at?
No.
Great. 58%, 6 out of 10 in the middle class said, absolutely. Try to get better at what you're bad at.
I hire all that stuff out. I do not need to be good at doing my own taxes.
No, but they even teach kids this. You know, I mean, my daughters went to Montessori where they let the kids, this is, you know, early school. Mm-hmm. And they let them focus on what they love doing and what they're great at. And so for the ultra high net worth, it was 0 to get better. And I think Henry Ford was actually in court, and this may have been in Think and Grow Rich, and he was being sued because he didn't have an education and no way should he be whatever the thing was. And the thing I picked up, he said, I don't have to be good at everything. I don't need a degree. He says, I've got one of these. And he picked up the telephone. He had them bring a prop in. I got one of these. And I just have to call someone. So he got that idea that we don't have to be great at everything. So it's this 80-20 rule. And I actually did that at one point in my work. We had a dot matrix report that we would get. It was, you know, those pages that were all connected and big sheets like this that you go get, and a dot matrix. And I looked at that and it was showing our income from the clients, from the highest income to the bottom. And I went down and I looked at 80% of the income and I drew a line. And then I looked and it was 20% of our clients were generating 80% of the revenue. So we tore it off. And then on that one, we highlighted who were friends and family and da, 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 da. And then we took this other group out of 750 clients because one of our partners retired. We had 500 clients that, you know, and we were overwhelmed. We didn't know how do you service 750 clients when there's 2 advisors. So we actually practically gave them to a young man who was in the office next door. And everyone thought he was part of our team. He was a young attorney who, you know, they were thrilled. They had this new guy. He had all this time for them. And if you think about it, on the big picture, the clients were thrilled. the advisor was thrilled. I was thrilled. My clients were thrilled, but the shareholders, if you think of the shareholders of the company, they're thrilled because it's win-win.
Right.
You know, they weren't just like put into some group where they get a email or something. They really had a human being. So it was a really great idea for everyone. Okay, here's the funny part. The next time that report came, I did the same thing. 80% of the revenue was coming from 50 people. Mm. And then the other 80% of the people generated 20%. Mm. Isn't that amazing?
It is.
People, look at your client base and see what you're doing. And that could be eye-opening too.
Mm-hmm. We did that when we stopped taking insurance, actually. And we said, we want to make sure that we're aligned with the people that really get what we do, you know, that aren't in matching pill to ill and symptom to a medication, you know, that really want to take responsibility for their own health. And we really, like, we culled down our client list, and I started only working 3 days a week instead of five. And, you know, our income wasn't affected. It was really important for us to be able to really give the kind of service we wanted to a lower number of patients, rather than trying to make everybody happy in a whole bunch of paradigms that didn't fit with what we did. So.
And I'm like a bobblehead because I am agreeing.
Yeah, it was really important for us. And it really transformed our practice so that now we have happy, happy people that are really eager to get the time that they get with me, you know, because they're wanting coaching on how to take responsibility for their own world instead of something different than that. So.
And you're not going to burn out. And
right.
Autoimmune.
Exactly.
Because when we're adrenal depleted and we're feeling, you know, exhausted and worn out and trying to.
Right. You know, and then I'm a crabby person. And so then people that come to see me, they're not going to get what they need, which is that space held with compassion, you know?
Yeah. Or sometimes we end up then we're not interested because it's not, you know, we shouldn't be doing that work because there are people that would be really great at doing that.
Right. Part. Right.
And so again, help other people get employed. And
So with our last few minutes here, I know you have three secrets to success, and I wanted to have you end with those.
And see, these are classic. And the first is, and I mentioned in the very beginning when I talked about Think and Grow Rich, find a mentor, because John Maxwell, I remember, this is where I heard this. He says it takes 10 years or 10,000 hours to become an expert in your field.
Yeah.
So you want to, you know, find someone that's doing what you want. That's what you do with your school too. Find someone that's doing what you want to do and learn from them. Now, it can be a program. It can be a coach. It can be a book that teaches you what you need to do. So the second thing is to create a community or to join a community. And now there are so many of them, but find a tribe and surround yourself with people that love and support you and will cheer you on. And then the naysayers, you need to put them. I have this thing in my course called Theater of Life. And you're on the stage and you get to decide where people in your life sit. Some of those people are in the back, standing room only. And then some you have to put outside. And then the third is to never, ever give up and to learn how to manage your energy and manage your mindset. And as I talked about earlier, so often we give up before we reach success. And sometimes it's so close. I know for myself, and I know people are probably listening, you've tried dieting. I've launched programs that weren't successful the first time. And then I didn't want to do it again. And so I just, all that work creating, and I wouldn't launch it again because I thought it was not good. Where, no, there was probably something that needed to be done. See? So don't give up, you know, reach out for the help, and you can get that through your community, you know, or through this guide, whoever it is that you're learning from. So it's really important. So I just love those three tips because everyone can do it. Right?
That's right. Thank you, Ketana. We are going to have your free gift with your talk here and your contact information for Smart Women and the Smart Women's Academy, Empowerment Academy. Yeah.
Yes.
Of which I am part of, which I am very proud to be a part of.
Oh, yes, yes. And we have, you know, classes with you and also, you know, your gift. And, you know, we're planning another interview with you. So
yeah,
really wonderful. But everyone can access these free courses and resources without charge. So I hope they come and share with others because it is a 501c3 nonprofit. And yeah, we're always open to bringing in new people.
Thank you so much. Perfect. Thanks for spending this time with us. We're just sharing a portion of your wisdom. It's so vast. Really appreciate you.
Thanks so much.
All right, everybody. Until next time, be well.